Hi, my name is Billy Thompson, and I am the Faith Relations Manager with Habitat for Humanity, and I am humbled and I am honored to be able to be here with you today and to share in this service with you. My role as Faith Relations Manager, really what that means is I get the unbelievable privilege of being able to come alongside and work with the faith community. It is a rare gift that I have to, on a day-to-day basis, be able to come alongside people who are taking their faith and they're putting it into action. That it's not just something where people are coming in on a Sunday and that's that, but then they're taking that faith, they're activating it, they're putting it into the community, they're doing something with it. And it is a unique gift that I have to be able to do that. We heard a little bit earlier today when Linda was talking that Habitat has just recently finished its 600th home here in Evansville, which is just an incredible thing. Habitat has been in Evansville for, we're celebrating our 40th anniversary this year as well, and that we are at a place where we have 600 homes built in this community to help those who are needing a hand up, not a handout. It's an incredible thing, and to get to a number like 600, that's not because of we have great staff. You don't get to that kind of milestone because of great staff. You get to that kind of milestone because the community of Evansville has rallied around this issue of the housing crisis in Evansville, and you have put your full support behind that in such an incredible way. So I just want to start off by saying thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. I know that Bethlehem has been a massive part of that for many, many years, that you have embraced this ministry. Just the hands that went up of those who have supported with their finances, those who have supported with their talents and ability and the sweat of your brow of coming out to volunteer, those that are helping put on fundraisers, that are participating on committees and things like that that help raise the finances. Thank you so much. The UCC, DOC, the United Church of Christ, and the Disciples of Christ, those churches have come together to build 27 homes here in Evansville, which is an incredible thing. Thank you so much for that. One of my favorite things as well is that of the 600 homes that have been built in Evansville, over a fourth of those have been fully funded by the faith community. It's just a remarkable thing to see the people of God come together to put their faith into action to make that happen. So again, thank you so much. We talk a lot about, and we've got the picture up here of a home, but we don't do this to build a home. We do it for the family that gets to reside in the home. That's 600 families that now have the opportunity for generational change in their life because of the work that Bethlehem and others have done. So thank you so much for that. As you guys were coming in, you got some bios along with your program, because we're not done at 600. The work hasn't been accomplished. We don't celebrate and say, wow, what a great thing, and then ride off into the sunset. The housing crisis is still a housing crisis. There's still so many more families that need to be impacted. And the bio that you have is of the next homeowner that's going into the home that the UCC DOC group is funding. And so you can learn a little bit more about her and her family, and the work is going to continue. So thank you so much for everything that you've done, and thank you so much for everything that you're continuing to do for families here in Evansville and for the work and ministry that you've partnered alongside with Habitat. Thank you so much for that. I want to take a little time today and dig into the book of Ruth and look into Ruth chapter 2, because I think there's some really beautiful things that we can look at that helps inform us for how to take our faith and how to put that into action. See, in Ruth chapter 1, just before we started, just to help us kind of catch up into the story a little bit here, a massive famine had struck the land of Israel, and it had been going on for years. Things had gotten very, very desperate. Enough so that a man by the name of Elimelech took his family, which was his wife, Naomi, and their two sons, and decided the best course of action for them and their future would be to leave Israel to seek a place that was not under this famine. And so they went into the land of Moab. Moab was an enemy nation of Israel. It was not necessarily a welcoming environment for them. It would be in what is now the nation of Moab would be in what is now the nation of Jordan, the middle part of the nation of Jordan. And so they crossed into Jordan, and during their time there, things did not go particularly well for Elimelech and his family. His two sons had gotten married to Moabite women at the time, but not long after, Elimelech dies. And then both of his sons die. And so now here is Naomi, a widow in a foreign land, and there are these two daughters-in-law, one being Ruth, who are also widows themselves. So Naomi tells her daughters-in-law, hey, go back to your families. It'll be better for you to stay here in Moab. I feel like the best thing for me is to go back to my family in Israel. And so one of the daughters-in-law says, yep, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to stick with what I know. I'm going to go back to my family here. But the daughter-in-law, Ruth, she says, no, Naomi, you are my family now. I'll go back with you. So Ruth returns with Naomi back into Israel. The famine at this time has finished in Israel, but it hit everybody hard. But there was one particular man whose name was Boaz, who during the time of the famine, his field had continued to prosper. His land continued to produce. And so now Boaz is a man of high status in the community. He's someone who people look to for help. He's someone who people go to. He is a man of high importance. And so as we picked up in the reading in Ruth chapter 2, Ruth goes to her mother-in-law Naomi and says, hey, I'm going to go and start to glean in the fields. I'm going to start to go and work and try to help provide. You know, as widows in this time, in this context of history, they were in a very, very difficult position. They had no land of their own. They had no way to earn income of their own. And so Ruth goes and says, I'm going to go glean in someone's fields. And we see back in the book of Leviticus chapter 19, God has set up some provision for this. He's created law to help in these types of situations. If you look in Leviticus, it tells us that whenever you have your field, that as you harvest your field, you are to leave the edges alone. Don't harvest from the edges of the field. That is to be left for the poor to go through and gather out of that outer section. So out of the abundance that you have, leave the edges for others. But even further than that, that as people would go through and harvest the field, the rest of it, that if anyone dropped anything as they were gathering and harvesting up, if anything hit the ground, they were not allowed to pick it up. The workers were not allowed to. Because then the poor, the widows, like Ruth, would then come along behind the workers through the rest of the field, and anything that they dropped, by law, it was theirs. And so this was a form of social welfare that God had established in the law to help take care of others. And this does a couple of things. One, this law, it commands farmers to have a generous heart, to not look at everything as theirs, to look at this is what God has provided, but God has provided enough for me to be able to allow others to benefit off of it as well. Commanded the farmers to have a generous heart. It also commanded those who were less fortunate to be active and work for their food, to provide for their own needs with dignity, to not just have to sit and beg, but to be able to go to work and to have their needs met with dignity. It again is this idea of them getting a hand up, not a hand out. And so Ruth, this is what she's saying I'm going to do. I'm going to go, I'm going to glean from the outer edges of the field, and then I'm going to follow the workers, and I'm going to start to gather up that way. And so Boaz comes down to the scene. Ruth is out gleaning in his field. And it says that Boaz, as Ruth and the other workers, the young men, the young women that were employed by Boaz, says that as Boaz comes onto the field, he's greeted warmly. It seems like he has a good relationship with his workers. But then Boaz does something that's fascinating to me. And I think this is really important to us, that he's overseeing, he's a busy man, he's looking at all that's going on in the field, all that's being done. It says that Boaz noticed Ruth. This is a hugely important piece of the story. Boaz noticed Ruth. How often do you think that we, as we are going about the busyness of our lives, whether it's the things that are going on with our jobs, the things that are going on with our family, whatever it is that we, in today's culture, we scurry from here to there, how many times do you think that those who are in need, we pass right by and we don't notice? We don't see them. We don't notice them and their humanity, and we don't notice them and their need. See, Boaz could have easily just glanced over the field and just saw a woman, a foreigner, not just a foreigner, but a foreigner from an enemy land. He could have passed right over seeing the widow. He could have passed seeing right over someone who was less fortunate, because he was a man of importance. He was a man who was busy. He was a man who had things that needed to be accomplished and needed to be done. But Boaz noticed. And because Boaz noticed someone who needed a hand up, then Boaz was able to speak into that. Then Boaz was able to take action. Boaz was able to do something about it. See, Ruth checks every marginalized box you could in here. Being a foreigner, being someone less fortunate, being a widow, being, and again in that time, in that culture, being a woman. She checked every marginalized box. But that's exactly who Boaz noticed. Boaz wasn't the only one who noticed, though. See, Boaz goes to his overseer, the man in charge, and he asks, "Hey, who's that?" And the overseer had noticed her as well. He says, that's Ruth. That's Naomi's daughter-in-law. You know, the one who left everything that she knew, who left her family to come live in a foreign land to help support her mother-in-law. Like, who does that? Like, that's amazing. He says, she's worked hard all day. He noticed her as well. And so Boaz allows her to continue to work, but he doesn't stop there. He tells her, he calls her over and says, "Hey, I've sent word to my young men. No one will touch you. No one will harm you. You're under my protection. I don't want you to go and glean at other fields. I want you to stay here. I will help provide. I know you'll be safe here with me, with my people." He tells her, "I want you not to walk behind, but I want you to walk alongside with the young women, that are working for me." See, the order of events would be the young men who are under his employ would come, and they would have their sickles and they would cut down the stalks. And then the women would come behind and they would gather up the stalks and bundle them and then take them to the threshing floor. And then the poor, like Ruth, would then come behind the women and pick up what was left. But Boaz is saying, no, I think it's important that you, as someone who is new, someone who is coming in, I want you to kind of start to be adopted in. I want you to go alongside with my young women. I want you to start to gather, and I want you to start to be a part of this community. See, in Boaz's field, Ruth would find companionship. She'd find protection. And Boaz told her one other thing. I want you to go and drink from our water. I want you to, like, go to the company watering hole, you know. I want you to, again, anything that we are doing, you need to feel a part of. I don't want you to be able to just glean and be someone on the outskirts, someone who we're allowing to gather, but you're really not a part of us. Everything he's doing is he is making her and integrating her into their community. And he gives her that refreshment as well. At lunchtime, he goes a step farther. And he tells Ruth, hey, come and eat the meal with us. Have a seat at the table. This was not the common way to treat those who were gleaning behind. They were typically kept outside. But he brings her in, gives her a seat at the table. As we heard through the reading, he gave her some of the wine. He gave her the vinegar to dip her grain, her bread into, which was like, you know, the nice stuff. That's the good stuff. Get that extra flavor. He really takes and makes her have a seat at the table, treats her in her humanity as she is. And then after the meal, he does something a little extra. He calls the men and the women together again. And he says, hey, Ruth is going to glean with you now. But he kind of tells the men that as you're doing your job, drop a little extra. Drop a little extra for her. I love the way he handles this. Because Boaz shows incredible kindness and incredible generosity to Ruth. And as he does so, he is very loud with his generosity of kindness. Come be a part of us. Walk alongside with my women. Be a part of our community. Have a seat at the table. Here's the wine. Here's the vinegar. He is very loud with his generosity of kindness towards her. It's obvious. She sees it. She feels it. She appreciates it. But in his generosity of charity, he's quiet. It's, hey, just come in. Drop a little extra for her. She still has to do the work. He's not just going with the big bag and being like, look at what I'm giving you. With his finances, with his resources, his generosity is quiet. He allows her that dignity of doing the work. He allows her to feel like I am helping to provide for my family. And I love that Boaz treats her with the generosity of kindness, loud, over the top. Generosity when it comes to this, keeping that quiet. I think that's a fascinating way to go about things. So Ruth goes through the rest of the day. She works hard, sun up to sun down. Constantly bending over, picking up, gathering. Like, it's hard work. She works hard all day. And when she gets done, and she returns home to her mother-in-law, Naomi, she has, it says, an ephah of barley. I don't know exactly. I don't have a good conversion method right there. But from what we learn, it's about 30-something pounds of barley. Or, to put it into another perspective for it, it's the equivalent of what someone gleaning through a field, it's the equivalent of what they would get in about 2 weeks. She gets home and Ruth is like, whose field did you go in? Who showed you this kindness? Whose favor did you come under? This was not just a normal day's work. Someone was clearly very generous to you in this. And see, Boaz, his generosity towards Ruth was enough that it didn't just meet Ruth's needs. His generosity towards her was enough that it allowed Ruth to in turn be generous to others. It didn't just provide her needs, it was enough for her mother-in-law Naomi's needs. And it was enough for her to share with some others as well. Boaz's generosity towards her was enough that it allowed Ruth to be in a position to help pay it forward a little bit too. And so as we look at this example of being generous, of how to serve, how to give a hand up, not just a hand out, I want us to take a little bit and reflect on, okay, what areas of my life have I been blessed in abundance? What do I have a little extra on the edges of my field? Maybe that is generosity of finances, and God's blessed you in that way to be able to give in that respect. Maybe it's a generosity of time that I can help step in and I can help serve in a certain way. Maybe it's a generosity of talent. God has given me this gift. God's giving me this ability. How can I be generous and give that back to others? How is it that we can integrate people who are on the outside into the community? See, I think there's a really interesting principle that you see in Scripture. And it's when there's a pattern, when God establishes a pattern, pay attention. He's trying to get your attention. He's trying to tell you something. And when you read through the book of Ruth, if you pay close attention, not every time, but almost every time that Ruth is mentioned, she is mentioned as Ruth the Moabite. Okay, so why is she always mentioned as Ruth the Moabite? And I think it's because God's trying to get our attention of saying, hey, this was someone who was of a foreign land. Not just a foreign land, but an enemy nation who most people were like, no, stay out. Stay out of our community. We do not want you. But then we get to see that Ruth is then adopted and integrated into this community. I think that's a beautiful thing. How is it that we can see those who are on the outside in whatever aspect you want to look at and start to integrate them, make them feel a part of the community? How are ways that we can be generous with our kindness and be loud with that? How are ways that we can also be generous to others? And when necessary, that's kept a little more quiet. See, it's not just, I'm not standing up here and saying, hey, these are ways to get more involved with Habitat. It's not what I'm about. This church has overwhelmingly shown generosity and support to the ministry of Habitat, and I thank you so much for that. But what are other ways that the church, what are other ways that us as individuals can notice those who are in need and start to do something about that? And maybe that's with other ministries that are going on here at Bethlehem. Maybe that's stepping in and working with the kids. Maybe that's stepping in and using your musical gifts in a way for the church. Maybe that's doing missions in Louisiana. Maybe that's doing missions other places. What are other ways that the church can continue to get involved, or you as individuals? What are things that maybe no one else has noticed? Other groups that no one else has noticed that you're starting to notice, that God's kind of placed in front of you, maybe for a reason, for you to take notice and then start to then put your faith into that action. And I think when we do that, we'll see our community transform. We'll see our church transform in an incredible way.